Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I think Mother Earth wants far less toxics and more health for her planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics, like mercury, PFAS, and pesticides, are playing in our daily lives. My guest today is Julie Rosenbach. She's a sustainability director for the city of South Portland, Maine, overseeing policies related to green, environmental initiatives that are put into place to mitigate the effects of climate change. Julie, thank you so much for joining me today on What Mama Wants.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
There is so much that your sustainability office is doing, and I find all of that exciting, like anti-idling, alternative fuels, EV and alternative transportation options. But I think maybe the most unique thing that you're doing right now is demonstrating how collaboration can work between municipalities working together with Portland, Maine. I wonder if you could tell me about One Climate Future and how you've developed that for both of the cities.
Absolutely. One Climate Future is, as far as we could tell at the time, the country's first joint climate action and adaptation plan between two cities. And so we developed it. It got approved and adopted by both of our councils in 2020, but it took us 18 months to develop because what we were looking for was a plan that would be a little bit like a comprehensive plan, something that had a lot of weigh-in by members of both of our communities and would help us reach our joint goals. Both of our city councils had adopted goals to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 80% by 2050. And our city council adopted another goal to lead the way by using 100% clean renewable energy by 2040. So we work together because there are so many ways that our cities are joined by Casco Bay. We have shared geography and people live and work in both Portland and South Portland. And we have done a lot of work together, Troy and I, for the Portland Sustainability Office and South Portland Sustainability Office. So it only made sense that we collaborate on this plan as well. It's called One Climate Future because we do have One Climate Future and it's a shared blueprint for how we get there.
I love it. It's kind of a bird's eye view. You know, they don't see the geopolitical boundaries around towns.
Yeah.
If all the water drains in the same body of water. And
right.
That's brilliant. And you referenced Troy. That's Troy Moon, who's your counterpart in Portland, who was a guest on my show just 1 month ago. So that's very cool. And I didn't actually learn about you through Troy, I learned about you through Kyra Newmoff Shields, who is from Healthy Babies Bright Futures. But here you are really setting the standard, the gold standard for how to approach sustainability citywide across the country. Which have you gotten some national attention for that?
Well, definitely a lot of local press. And I appreciate you saying the gold standard because our gold standard is pushing the envelope to see how much we can do to change our communities, better our communities, make them safer and cleaner, and really combat climate change. And we can do a lot. We can do really challenging things. The technology is there. The organizations and the institutions are on board. And it's really a matter of being diligent and persistent about putting programs together that really tell people how we can change and then help them get there. Because we can't just tell people to change. We have to help make it easier for them to do it.
Yeah, easier. And when you're doing it alongside of your neighbors, the lift is lighter somehow.
Right, right. We all can play a role. You know, South Portland is a small community. We're 25,000 people. But what we can do is show other communities what's possible and how to push forward, you know, by being a more sustainable community. And if we can do it and it works and people are like, oh, yeah, this just helped us have cleaner air and cleaner water and reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, then they can do it too. We're learning from the big cities and other cities are also learning from us.
Yes, and I think it's great that the cities have taken the lead, endorsed by governors who have also taken the lead since our national leadership has not really led us to a safe place. The people in the houses want something different, and you're offering the people in the houses a way to get together and make it different for our local communities.
Okay, that's a really good point, because the state's Maine Won't Wait climate plan is really aligned. Our climate plans are really aligned, and it's just fantastic to have the support of the state and local communities pushing forward. We're all working together, and that helps so much.
It does, because we're not alone, because it's really a daunting task to combat climate change. And so, whenever you can, then move forward.
Well, yes. And I always say that partnerships are the key to everything. We are a little sustainability office. For the first few years I was here, I was the one person sustainability department. And now I have fantastic staff that work with me, as does Portland's office. But we're still small offices, and partnerships are the key to making change in our community.
Well, way to lean into it. I think that's brilliant. We know that fertilizers create harms, pesticides create harms, and they wreak havoc on our health. To name just a short few from the list: infertility, cancers, asthma, autism, diabetes, eye problems, endocrine and nervous system issues, and the list goes on. Your two towns of Portland and South Portland have banned chemical fertilizers and pesticides in order to protect our bodies from toxics, but also the pollinators that come and make fruit possible. How are these toxicants related to climate change, both fertilizers and pesticides?
Well, you're absolutely right. We passed a pesticide use ordinance in 2016, and we followed with a fertilizer use ordinance in 2020, which we wrapped together. And so now both of those are under Chapter 32. It's called our Land Care Management Ordinance. And in our Land Care Management Ordinance, we also developed standards for new development that said you can't just remove good topsoil and bring in or topsoil. It has to be decompacted. It has to have a certain amount of organic material in it and be the right pH for things to grow successfully without chemical inputs. So we passed both of these ordinances and said we really need a paradigm shift away from what used to be the norm of, you know, you have a pristine grassy yard that you need chemical pesticides to kill anything like weeds and fertilizers to make it grow green and pristine, to getting away from, we call it the chemical treadmill, because what it does is it feeds the plants but not the soil. And so then the soil health degrades so much that you need those chemicals in order to keep things green and healthy. And so what we're trying to do is get away from that and base everything on soil health. So in our One Climate Future Climate Action Plan, it's a climate action and adaptation plan. So we have mitigation strategies to reduce the amount of fossil fuels we create. And also we know that climate change is here and it's coming no matter how successful we are. So how do we become more resilient communities? And one of the strategies is to build the soil health. If we're going to protect our ecosystems and our ecosystems are going to provide the services that protect us, we need to start with healthy soil. Literally building it from the ground up.
Yeah, you put a good spin on grassroots. And so how has South Portland approached initiatives to make good science-based choices for the environment on a city level? How do you protect soil across the whole city?
Oh, it's like a parcel by parcel, one parcel at a time, leading the way and changing. Our standards first, just outreach in and of itself, it doesn't really go that far. And an ordinance by itself doesn't really go that far. But when you pair them together and you say, we are going to pass this ordinance that sets a standard of land care that we want. And then rather than make it really enforcement heavy, we're going to help teach you why and how we want this change to happen. So we've done an enormous amount of outreach and education about organic land care over the past several years. And what we found recently in the last year or so is people really want to bring it to their yard specific and to understand how it could work in their yard. So we developed this program, and it took, I think, over a year to put together, but it's called 100 Resilient Yards. We have 8 partners. What we're trying to do is help people transition to resilient landscapes. And we have sort of 5 yardscape designs. We have rain garden, pollinator garden, vegetable garden, native plantings. We used to call it rewilding, but it's been changed to native plantings. And then if people really want a lawn, which that's fine to play on and recreate, healthy organic lawns. And so our program, 100 Resilient Yards, is based on providing hyperlocal technical assistance. We will come to your yard, we'll give you an hour of technical assessment. So it's not a garden makeover. Our tech experts are going to do a soil test as a basis of everything and really look at what are the issues around here. Why might your grass not be growing in that shady, wet spot? Maybe it's not a good spot for grass. Maybe you want a rain garden there. Maybe you want something else. And then we're going to follow up. Volunteers are going to then go back to each site and provide an hour of help in implementing the recommendations that our technical experts come out with. And we're going to provide people with, I'm going to call it a starter package. We're not going to be able to redo entire yards or sites, but really provide some native plantings and some services that help people start to make the transition that we want to see.
That's really cool. So a city of, you said 25,000 people, 100 people can see if they can get this kind of support to make their yard more bee-friendly.
Well, resilient, right? A resilient, yes, resilient landscape is providing habitat for pollinators and native plants. And yes, we're limiting it to 100, but we've opened our application to businesses. They might have a median strip right in front of the business or somebody with a yard. And we're saying public-facing yards so that people can really see the transition as they go by. But it could be businesses, organizations, anybody who has a patch of green that they want to make more resilient. And we were able to start with 100 because we thought 100 resilient yards, that sounds ambitious, but we had to find the funding for all of this. And so we applied for grants and we put 4 grants together. We have 8 partner organizations. We have MOFCA and Maine Audubon and the Cumberland County Soil Water Conservation District, Osborne Organics, Wild Seed Project, and Friends of Casco Bay and the University of Maine Cooperative Extension and Garbage to Garden, because all of our missions in developing resilient yards come together. And every one of these organizations offers a bit of expertise that enables this program to happen. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, again, you're resilient when you're working together.
Mm-hmm. There's so many different definitions of resilient, but it's, you know, I think overall, like practices and principles that help people withstand, recover, and bounce back from major disruptions, right? So we think about sea level rise and maybe flooding, and we think about high heat events. And what we need to do is build our ecosystem to be able to help us withstand these events. But what we also need to do is build social connections. If something happens, talk to your neighbors, call on your neighbors, and we all work on this together. And so the other piece of this program is really build a team of people out there. People love talking about what they're doing in their yard and yard work and this cool new plant that they found and how the pollinators are coming back and how many bees they saw the other day. And it's fantastic. And to build a social network around this as well.
Yeah, because in an emergency, you don't call somebody in Chicago. You ring your next door neighbor's doorbell.
You do. And also, even without an emergency, you can talk to your next door neighbor about, hey, I just planted bee balm and like all of these birds and bees came into my yard and it was so exciting and fantastic. And whatever it is, helping people spread the practices that help bring environmental health, health for our people, for our pets, all of these things. Because what we find is that these things can make us happy too. It's really big.
Yeah, it reminds me of Healthy Babies, Bright Futures. Yeah. You know, these developing bodies being exposed to chemicals make us miserable. It makes them sick, right? And it makes us miserable.
Right.
And the converse is you plant bee balm, smells good, you get hummingbirds, and you get to talk about it with your neighbors. So,
and you sit with a cup of lemonade or iced tea and you just watch all of this busy, busy pollinators working in your pollinator garden. And that is healthy futures.
I am so excited about it. I was just thinking today about being on my patio soon. I can't wait.
Right. Well, you know, the funny part, Kate, is that we launched this program on March 1st of this year, and we had like 2.5 snowstorms in March. And we still have had more than 300 people sign up for this program because people are excited and they want to do this.
That's exciting. That is really cool. And you've started something wonderful. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Help. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Julie Rosenbach. She's a sustainability director for the city of South Portland, Maine. And we're talking about their 100 Resilient Yards initiative, which is using organic lawn care to establish a network of habitats that support a full range of biological diversity and provide valuable ecosystem services and something to talk about with your neighbors. Julie, what are your hopes for this 100 Resilient Yards program that's just now getting underway? What might happen?
Actually, I have high hopes. So usually it takes more than just one season to completely transform a yard and have it take and have it grow. I want people to get excited, right? To get some native plants and to plant them and start a vegetable garden and know that their lawn, if they want one, is organic and it's safe and it's growing. So I want people to see the results of what we're able to do. But more than that, I want to change the paradigm around yard care that has been in place for the past, I don't know, 50 or 60 years or more, that says the mark of a good home is to have grass without weeds in it that's pristine, that, you know, is fed by chemical inputs to stay that way. I want to change that paradigm to say grass is fine, right? There's so many places where you want to have your kids run and play or pets or something like that. And it's great. And we want to make sure that it's organic. And that means feeding the soil and making sure that it starts with the soil and not have it have to be pristine. Clover in grass. You know, I remember when my kids were little and I would go to do the first mow and they would just stop me to not get rid of the dandelions because they were precious. And, you know, and I certainly wouldn't purposely spread dandelions, but like they're precious. Right. And at some point we lose that and we see that they're a weed and something that we have to get rid of, but really make sure that we sort of get back in touch with nature and the pollinators and the way that our environment works. It's a web of interactions that is so magnificent. Like you can't even imagine how the things all work together to support life and health. And I'm getting off topic now because I'm so excited about it, but I want nothing short of a paradigm that says, let's create a healthy environment right in our own front yards, right? You know, in World War II, they championed victory gardens, and that's great. And that came back during COVID. And now let's champion something that's just like a victory garden, but it's bigger and wider. And if you want vegetables, grow vegetables. And if you want pollinators, it's all interconnected. And we can build a series of habitats that are healthy. And then that will help ripple on to the rest of the community.
I love it. And even if you don't get chosen as one of the 100 yards, doesn't mean you can't go buy native plants and make a pollinator garden and go with organic grass as well.
It's true. We're going to have to figure out what the next step is beyond the 100 yards. It's taken a lot to come up with this program and really sync 8 different organizations and grant money from 4 different places. But we are already seeing that this is the right approach because so many people are interested. So we're going to have to figure out what to do beyond the 100 yards at some point.
You are a true collaborator. And I imagine Mother Earth is pretty tickled by your city's efforts to generate some excitement around doing things a little differently in a way that is more respectful to the earth. I'm curious, as a sustainability director, what you suspect Mama wants. What does Mother Earth want more of or want us to do differently?
Boy, you know what comes to my mind immediately is the movie Moana. Have you seen the movie Moana?
I have seen Moana.
Okay. It makes me think of Moana and Tafiti, who's angry because somebody stole the heart of Tafiti, which is to me really like our bearing, right? We're not here to make nature better or to control it. I'm a very practical person. And so questions like this that get me sort of thinking in the clouds are not true to my nature, but it makes me think of all the collaborations we're doing to change our world for the better, to promote kindness and working together and teaching our kids to be great humans that can contribute to the world. And it's the same principle of working with nature to create a healthy environment around us that can support us, that we can also support.
Thank you for reaching into the clouds. I know that's not always easy. And you really walk the talk. You know what you're driven by, and you are just making it operationalized in a very practical way. And so that's what that 100 Resilient Yards is all about. So to close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your personal relationship with the earth, if I might.
Okay.
Okay. What did you like to do outside as a kid?
Oh my, everything. I mean, tennis and soccer were my organized sports outside, but I loved playing in the woods. And it was actually in college when I learned about camping and hiking, and that started my lifelong love of that.
Can you describe a scene in nature when you have felt awe?
I wish I could describe everything that just went through my brain, that all the images that went through my brain. I'll tell you my best awe moment, though. I had a chance to go to Siberia and spend some time over there. And it was amazing. And I wanted to go out to Lake Baikal. You can see it on a map, on any atlas, anything. It's out in Siberia. It's above Mongolia. And it's the world's oldest and deepest lake. And you can dip a cup into this lake and drink from it. And I went to Siberia in January because I don't know, I need an extra challenge. And I went and I walked out on Lake Baikal, you know, and it was just the most awe-inspiring moment of this pristine lake that is in the middle of, you know, Siberia, that is still clean, and people in the surrounding areas really rely on it for fish and clean water and spirituality.
The things that make a sustainability director feel awe. What's one thing you currently wonder about when you're out in nature?
Lately, you know, I've been reading a little bit about and hearing a lot about how trees communicate with each other. And that is so amazing to me. And I wonder about it all the time. And I don't have time to learn more about it with children and work and everything, but it is the most amazing thing to me to think about. Just there's so much we don't know about how nature lives.
I think that's pretty cool that that's caught your fancy, since that's kind of what you do. You've coordinated 8 different kinds of trees to all get together on this project, and you've found 4 other kinds of trees to sponsor it. It's like, of course you love that. That makes great sense.
Yeah.
And my final question is, what is your favorite baby animal?
What's my favorite baby animal? That is not fair because I love animals so much. All of them. I can't even pick. In my household, we have 2 dogs, a cat, and 5 chickens. And we show great restraint with not bringing more animals into our house.
And all their babies are adorable. I agree. Julie, you are absolutely pioneering a new way of practicing collaborative leadership with a clear eye on the future. Your vision has helped to create a model that supports health, resilience, and life itself. Thank you so much for your strategic leadership, and thank you for being my guest today on What Mama Wants.
Wow, Kate, thanks for those kind words. I have to tell you that there's a team of people. I get to be the one that's talking to you, but there is a whole team of people that are working on all of this stuff, and they're amazing. And many of them are in my office and in other organizations we're working with. So thanks for having me, and thanks for having your show.
Well, please pass our regards on to your whole office staff, because you're doing wonderful things.
Will do. Thank you.